We're back in West Virginia. Actually, we never left West Virginia. It didn't feel like West Virginia on Thursday and Friday of last week at Saints training camp at the Greenbrier. And it was such a productive 2 days. We actually have stuff left over that we didn't get to last week, in part because some of the interviews weren't taped by the time it was time to send in the segments of PFT Live. But we've got some great stuff coming up today. Before we get to that, some great stuff happening in the NFL now that football is back. And I got nothing to add about the Hall of Fame weekend, the game last night. It's not really a game. It's a glorified scrimmage. We got to start somewhere. It's a preseason game, yada, yada, yada. The speech is Saturday night. I've said my piece on the website. They need to hire speech writers for these guys. They need to get these guys properly rehearsed and prepared. They'd be doing them a favor. I'm not a big believer in the idea that just because a guy's earned a spot in the Hall of Fame, he can stand up there and filibuster for as long as he wants. I think he will appreciate it. Definitely in the long term, when he goes back and watches that speech and cringes that he said all the things he said, that he took as long as he did, or that, I mean, the case of Ray Guy, he was just reading off the page. If that's the case, give these guys a teleprompter or something. I mean, make it something that is more enjoyable for the audience and ultimately for the Hall of Famers. That isn't even on the rundown for today, but I just had to get that off my chest. I harp on the Hall of Famers being brief, and I've already wasted valuable minutes of my time and yours. More importantly, yours. I'm not going to waste any more time, though, because the big story right now, and it changes from day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute, but Andy Dalton, the Bengals quarterback, signs a 6-year contract extension. Now, we know how contracts work in today's NFL. The only commitment truly comes from the player, because Andy Dalton through 2020, just like Colin Kaepernick through 2020 and Tyron Smith of the Cowboys through 2023, can't leave. They are bound to their teams, but the teams aren't really bound to them. The only way you bind the team to the player is to have fully guaranteed contracts for every year of the deal, which doesn't happen in the NFL. It happens very, very rarely. I can't even think of a time where a contract was fully guaranteed for its full duration other than a 1 or a 2 year deal. Or if you have so much guaranteed money up front, such a big signing bonus that it becomes impractical, if not impossible, to cut the guy in the first 2 or 3 years of the deal. I remember when I was getting into this business 13 years ago, my God, it's been that long. The valuation focused on the first 3 years because it was a given that the player would play all of the first 3 years of the contract. After that, it was a year-to-year proposition. Now, it's 1 or 2 years. 2 years at most. A lot of these contracts are year-to-year, especially because the signing bonus isn't so high that a team wouldn't have its cap situation crippled by moving on after only one season. So with Andy Dalton, now, it's reportedly a 6-year extension worth $115 million. The details aren't out yet. I've got a line on them, though. I've got a fish on the hook. I just need to get the fish into the boat, and I had to stop and do this show. As soon as the show's done, I may have Andy Dalton's full numbers. I may be able to compare Dalton's deal to Kaepernick's deal. As I understand it, the Kaepernick deal was so bad that it has made it difficult, more difficult, for players like Andy Dalton and other young franchise quarterbacks to get their contracts. Because the Kaepernick structure, the team-friendly structure, with all of the bells and whistles that inure to the benefit of the 49ers, make it harder and harder for these younger guys to bust that structure. And what it's going to take, somebody's going to have to play out a contract, get to a franchise tag, get to the open market, and change the structure, change the precedent. Because the most recent precedent is Colin Kaepernick. I've got a feeling Andy Dalton's structure looks a lot like Kaepernick's, although there may be some stuff in Dalton's deal that is better than what Kaepernick got. We'll know more, hopefully later today, at the latest by midweek, because that's when the official numbers end up being disseminated to a lot of people, and it makes it easy for people like me to get their hands on the full numbers. I hope to have them before too long. I hope to have them soon enough that this entire first chunk of the monologue will be moot, because we'll have the real numbers. Nothing moot about Johnny Manziel, who's still not the starting quarterback in Cleveland. But, you know, I wavered a little bit because I thought the off-field antics would result in the Browns putting Manziel on the bench to start the season just to send him a message. They can't fire him, but what they can do is they can take away what otherwise hurts him most, his ability to play. But I think the Browns are content to just send a message to Johnny Manziel to make him think that maybe they were going to bench him. Because other than a picture at a bar that looks fairly innocuous, especially in comparison to other images we've seen since he's been drafted by Cleveland, Johnny Manziel has stayed out of trouble. I was going to use a different saying that could have been viewed as an unintended or intended pun. But now he's catching up with quarterback Brian Hoyer, who at last check was being compared to Tom Brady. Now, here's the wild card, because Manziel is getting first-team reps. I don't want to bury the headline. He's getting first-team reps today. The perception from Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal is that Manziel is closing the gap on Brian Hoyer. What do the players want? I got a line on that one, too. You know, if I didn't have to do this show, I'd get more work done. I got a line on what the players think, because in Seattle a couple years ago, people heralded Coach Pete Carroll for doing the brave thing by going with the third-round rookie Russell Wilson. Look, Carroll was doing the smart thing. Carroll was doing the obvious thing, because everybody knew the way that Russell Wilson commanded that team that he was the best option. This time around, that may not be the case. This time around, the players like Joe Thomas, the guy who compared Brian Hoyer to Tom Brady, players may want Brian Hoyer for now, acknowledging that at some point it'll flip to Manziel. And if it happens next year, a lot of those guys may not even be there come next year. But that's going to be the real key here. Will Manziel have the support of the locker room? Will the players accept Manziel being made the starter? I still think it's going to happen. I still think, even though there aren't many similarities between the ownership, the front office, and the coaching staff, probably no similarities other than some scouts or whatnot from 2007 and now. 2007 was when Derek Anderson started ahead of Brady Quinn, and it created a mess that the Browns are still trying to recover from at the quarterback position. I think that they don't want to put themselves in a position where Brian Hoyer plays really well and makes it harder to put Johnny Manziel on the field. So stay tuned. All we know for now, Manziel finally getting first-team reps. We know that Mike Pettine, the head coach, would like to name a starter. And I still don't believe and won't believe that the Browns will put Johnny Manziel out there behind anything other than the starting offensive line during the preseason. Finally, a quarterback that Andy Dalton and Johnny Manziel should both aspire to be in most ways, other than certain uses of various handheld digital devices. But look, Brett Favre and the Green Bay Packers reportedly burying the hatchet via a conference call to be held today. And it's now been announced, I believe, by Favre that he'll be joining the Packers Hall of Fame in 2015, having his jersey number 4 retired in 2015. That's great. And it's long overdue, and it's about time. And Packers fans need to put the ugliness behind them, because it's easy to blame Brett Favre for everything that happened. But here's the reality. Brett Favre had a little quirk about how long he really wanted to play football. And he liked to talk about it. He liked to talk about whether he wants to keep going, whether he wants to stop. And the problem is, he talked about it. People wrote about it. People talked about it. And eventually the Packers got a little freaked out, and they used a first-round pick on Aaron Rodgers in 2005. So after Rodgers was on the bench for 3 years, the Packers decided, you know what? We like this Rodgers kid, and it's going to be up or out with Aaron Rodgers. And if Brett Favre just keeps hanging around, we may never get a chance to see what Aaron Rodgers can do. So let's tell Brett Favre we want an answer for the 2008 season early, because we know that if we tell him that early, the answer is going to be retirement. And then as soon as he retires, let's slam the door, let's move furniture in front of it, and let's hope he never unretires. And then when he did unretire, as they, I think at some level, knew he would do, that when that smell of the grass changes in late July, you decide, you know what, I still love football, I still want to play. That set the stage for the ugliness that followed. And both sides bear blame here. I'm not saying Favre is blameless, but the Packers ultimately wanted to move on from Brett Favre, and he ultimately wanted to keep playing football. So what's the guy supposed to do? What's he supposed to do if he wants to keep playing and the Packers decide they want to move on to Aaron Rodgers? It worked out better for the Packers than it did for Favre, because the Packers won a Super Bowl in the third year post-Favre. So hopefully Packers fans can put it all behind them and understand, look, the guy was just doing what he loved to do. He loved playing football. He didn't love the offseason, didn't love training camp, and liked to talk about when he was going to retire. And the Packers made the mistake of taking him seriously, and the Packers ultimately made the deliberate decision to move on, and so did Favre. And just because he played for the Vikings for a couple of years shouldn't make him a villain in Green Bay. He did a lot for the franchise, a lot for the fans, and here's hoping by 2015 that no one in Green Bay will hold a grudge, and no one at Lambeau Field on the moment that jersey is retired will boo Brett Favre. I got to move on, or the producers are going to be booing me, because I've gone a little long. But we don't have anybody waiting on the phone, because everything we have coming up comes to us from last week at Saints camp. When we return, a sit-down with general manager Mickey Loomis. Then, I don't want to call it an exclusive, because, you know, people say exclusive interview. Well, Gene Steratore, longtime NFL referee, would have talked to anybody who was there with a camera and a microphone that day. I just happened to be the one there. But you rarely hear from a referee. Long conversation, but an intriguing conversation with Gene Steratore coming up after Mickey Loomis. Then we wrap things up. A discussion we had with Jairus Byrd. I mean, we grabbed him coming off the practice field, shoulder pads on, almost pulled a Rookie Williams from 15 years ago and left his helmet on. But helmet off, pads on, Jairus Byrd to wrap the show. Before that, we'll talk to Mickey Loomis. We'll do that after the break. This is PFT Live.
You told me earlier this is your 30th NFL training camp. What's the biggest change you have seen in the NFL in the last 30 years?
Yeah, I think it's, the rules obviously have changed in terms of how much practice you get. And so, you know, when I started, we were having 60 or more training camp practices, and now we're down to about 30. So I think that's the biggest change.
How much harder does that make it to get a team ready to go week one and also to evaluate which of these guys at camp will be on the final roster?
I think it definitely makes it tougher. And look, one of the reasons we came here is you've got to take advantage of every minute of practice time that you have. And so in order to do that, you have to eliminate distractions. And there's lots of different forms of distractions, including the heat. You know, if a player's in that last hour of practice and thinking about how hot he is and how tired he is, then it's a lot more difficult to focus on his assignments. And so, that's part of the reason why we're here.
One guy who I suspect will probably make the roster this year, receiver Brandon Cooks, your first-round draft pick, drawn a lot of praise. Any surprise that he seems to be as far along as he is?
Well, yeah, I think a little bit, only because, you know, of the school that he went to, Oregon State. They had a late graduation date, and so he missed a good portion of time that the other rookies were able to come in our off-season program, and he missed that. And so, yet you wouldn't be able to tell that by where he's at in terms of this training camp. So that's a little bit of a surprise. I mean, we obviously, you know, when we studied him and evaluated him, we knew he was a smart kid, but he's done well.
Eventually, there will be players available from every camp because the cutdown days are coming. How much attention do you pay to that when players are released by other teams? Because a lot of names flood the market pretty quickly.
Yeah, look, our guys do a great job of evaluating, you know, the league as a whole. And look, we'll pay close attention to it. You know, we've been a team that's claimed a guy now and then. And as your team gets better, that's more difficult to do. But we'll pay close attention to it.
One guy who's in camp that wasn't part of the offseason program, Jimmy Graham. Any lingering issues, problems, or everything seems to be fine? Contract signed, everybody's happy, and it's all a thing of the past.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. Jimmy and I have had a number of good conversations, and the first day I asked him, hey, are we punching it out or are we hugging it out? And he said, we're hugging it out, so that's a good sign.
I never got the impression that anybody took anything personally, that this is a business aspect of the industry and we do what we have to do, and then when we get it solved, it's football again.
Yeah, I do think this. Look, I think contracts are a personal issue for players and any employee. Look, when my contract's due, that's a personal issue for me. And so I understand that. It is a business issue for the club, but I think we have to be sensitive at all times about how a player or any employee feels about their contract. And so we try to do that. We're not always successful, but we try to take, you know, as much of that emotion and pride out of it as we can. And yet, you know, it is a personal issue.
You have a quarterback who'd like to stay under contract for another decade or so, apparently, and play until he's age 45. What's your reaction when you hear that?
Well, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Look, Drew's been... Look, the words can't describe what he's meant to our organization, our team, our city. And as long as we can continue that, we're in favor of it.
And when you think back on 2006, just the fact that Drew was even available, I know he had the injury issue, but did that injury give you guys any hesitation whatsoever?
Well, look, it did. You know, we spoke to, and I spoke to a lot of doctors, a lot of people about it. And the one thing that resonated with me was the comment from one physician who said, look, I can't tell you that he'll be ready to go this season, but I can tell you that by next season, the second year, I think he will be, very nearly 100%, if not 100%. And so, look, if you have to wait 2 years for that guy to be ready to play and play at a high level, well, we're going to wait at least 2 years on a rookie quarterback. So that made a lot of sense to me.
And it's been a great combination with Drew, with Sean Payton, and with you running the organization. Can you ever envision being the general manager of this team without Sean as the head coach?
Well, not now. I certainly can't. He's He's a fantastic coach, obviously, but he and I, you know, we've clicked from the very beginning. You know, we have similar philosophies, and yet we don't always agree, but we're never disagreeable. And so, it's tough for me to envision the New Orleans Saints without John Payton.
We've seen a return in the past few years of teams having salary cap trouble because the cap wasn't growing as much as maybe it had in the past. But now we seem to be on the front end of a growth cycle. And do you get the impression the salary cap is going to be going up and that it is going to make it easier to maneuver under that spending limit?
Well, I don't know that I think of it in that term. Obviously, we have some short range and we have some long range planning. And then you have these things that happen that you don't expect that affect your cap. You know, for us, look, we've had a good team for a number of years now. And when you do that and you're trying to keep that group together, you're gonna be paying a lot of money to a lot of players, and you're bumping up against that cap, and you know that's been our circumstance for a few years now, and you have to adjust to that. I think we're going to be in that same position here for the next few years. Obviously, if the cap goes up a little more than we expect, that's some relief, but we're still behind the other teams in that regard that don't have those issues. So. You know, we'll take it as it comes. I don't know that we've thought about, hey, is it going to go up 15, 20 million? I don't know. Or 3 million. So we'll adjust accordingly, but we've got a plan for that.
We've seen an incredible transformation of the Saints defense from 2012 to 2013. Who gets the most credit for that?
Well, you know, I think it's always the players, number one, but you know, our defensive coaches have done a great job of taking the talents of our defensive players and putting them in a position to succeed. And Rob and Joe Vitt and Bill Johnson, Wesley McGriff have done a great job with that, taking advantage of the talents that we have and being positive with our guys. And look, I don't think our guys felt like 2012 was indicative of their talent. You know, we had a lot of things happen that year that were difficult. So, you know, I think this, we expect an improvement over last year as well, particularly in the area of takeaways.
Should Rob Ryan be an NFL head coach?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he should be. I think he'll get an opportunity. But I kind of like him as our defensive coordinator.
Well, it's a tough balance to strike. Right. Yeah, we want you to do well, but if you're here, you know, we won't complain about that. Is it the hair? Is it the bravado? Is it the connection to Rex? Why didn't he even get an interview? When you look at all the guys who get interviews, he can't even get one.
Well, look, that'll come. You know, the timing's never as quickly as you would like it. And look, I don't know what other teams and coaches are thinking, but he's a quality coach that deserves an opportunity, and I think he'll get one.
And hopefully, from your perspective, he won't be available to be hired by another NFL team until February.
That's right.
Because that
That's
would mean exactly that the right. Saints have made it all the way back to the Super Bowl. What is your expectation for this team?
Well, look, I think this, internally, we feel like we have a good team. We have the elements to be, you know, a championship contender. We felt like, you know, we felt that way for a number of years now. And so there's so many variables with injury, the timing of when you play teams. But look, we expect to be in every game and expect at the end to be fighting for, you know, the championship. And anything less is going to be a disappointment.
Well, we wish you all the best as you pursue your second NFL championship in New Orleans. Appreciate you taking some time.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Appreciate you being here.
Well, Gene Steratore, this is your 12th season as an NFL official, 9th as a referee. What's the biggest change you've seen in your time with the NFL as an official?
I think overall, maybe in the last 7 or 8 years, that, you know, there's more points now. The game is, I think, spread out a little more. It used to be kind of a run-oriented game. I think the run set up the pass. And it seems that the evolution now is that, you know, kind of the pass has taken precedent.
Do the players seem bigger, stronger, faster just in the last decade?
Yeah, I think combination of both. We're not getting any younger, and the ones that are coming in are awful young and in great shape. But yeah, I think just the genetics of it and their evolution is just phenomenal.
How hard is it when you're out there, though, in the moment, trying to spot with the naked eye in real time what's happening, while also trying to avoid getting knocked over by a 300-pound man?
Yeah. You know, the twofold. I think that the not getting knocked down is just a lot of preparation from the office, mechanically, putting yourself in the right position. You know, and as far as the speed of the game is concerned, to be honest with you, I think what happens, and I think players also feel this, once you get accustomed to this and you get into that moment, the game does slow down. And I know when we look at film the following week, if I go home and watch the game the next day or that night and I put it at 3/4 speed, then I really get a sense of kind of what I felt on the field. So I think when you are screwed in and the concentration level's so high, the game does slow down a little bit.
And some extra concentration will be required this year because one of the points of emphasis will be illegal contact and defensive holding, specifically on defensive backs against receivers. Talk about how that point of emphasis came to be.
Yeah, you know, I don't really get into a lot of how it comes to be. I think what's happening is there's probably a little more contact than they would want, and as you stated, it really isn't a rule change. It's a point of emphasis. So maybe the defensive hold that we passed on that was just kind of a shirt pull that they ran through that didn't show a lot of restriction or didn't take a step away. They want to get that out because what it does is it lends us to then have our judgment into that. And when you start putting judgment into plays of that nature, you run into what is probably the most dangerous word for us as officials, and that is consistency, where one official may not think that tug was enough, but the other did. So I think when you start to draw a line a little more in the sand to say, look, any kind of restriction whatsoever or hold at all, let's flag that. And the beauty about it, Mike, is I think as we've all watched the game evolve and some of the things become more technical and open the game up, the players do adjust because they are the best athletes in the world. So will we go through some growing pains potentially, and maybe there's an inordinate amount or higher number of flags thrown in the preseason or something of that nature? Yeah, I think there's a possibility of that. But I also see that their learning curve is so great that once they see what they can and can't do, and I think we've seen that even with hits on defenseless players in the last 3 or 4 years.
But will it just be at the beginning of the season, or will it be all season long? The last time that the point of emphasis was placed on illegal contact, defensive holding, the flags went from 79 in 2003 to 191 in 2004. Do you expect that it won't be a full season to adjust, or will it take all year and we'll look back and say, wow, look at that dramatic increase in flags?
Well, the hope is always that they make the adjustment. Because in order for them to emphasize this the way that they have done their homework and done their evaluations in the off season that they would like this to be part of the game. So the diligence on us being consistent and the players adjusting, that's where the difference maybe in the numbers will occur.
Who makes that call, though, when it's time to pick a point of emphasis? Is this league office? Is this Dean Blandino, the VP of officiating? It just comes down to the officials and the referees that this is what it's going to be?
You know, I don't know all the intricacies of how it gets to that point. I mean, there's competition meetings that involve coaches, teams, Dean, as you mentioned, and a collection of different groups. What we pretty much get is when we get to the clinic or as we get to our point, when the season starts again, we start to get a feel as to what has been discussed in that off-season time. And that's our job, is to really enforce those things.
Was there a sense during the 2013 season that there was a problem that we need to address at some point?
You know, I don't know if there... We never felt that in the regular season. But I guess as they had watched what they have watched and feel like it's something they want to, you know, crack down a little more on, that they felt that. And again, I kind of leave those decisions to the people that do very well at that, you know.
When one of those people is going to be in your ear when it's time to go get under the hood to do replay review, how do you feel about having that real-time assistance directly from the league office when you're conducting a replay review?
I think it's great. You know, the one thing that I have been around long enough in the league to watch the evolution of a lot of technology, you know, kind of expand and grow tentacles as time has gone on. And I think this is just another element of that. And I think it will make things more efficient. I also think it will give another perspective and another very valued, educated perspective from that point, from the office, anytime we can get any additional help and in those situations. You know, like the nice part about what we do, and I know that it's, you know, a lot of people ask me this, does it bother you when you make a ruling on the field and then have to overturn it in replay? And other than the couple years when I had my brother on the crew and I just was looking for a reason to overturn an older brother, which had nothing to do with the game, you know, at first you kind of get that feeling, will it bother me ego-wise or something? But no, because at the end of the day, the truth of it is we do want to get every play right. And as the technology evolves and replay evolves, as you mentioned, it's going to just help us make sure that we become, again, more consistent with a new part of the game and get the plays right.
What's the hardest part of getting it right? What type of call is the hardest to get right?
The ones that aren't black and white. You know, it's not baseball, it's not hockey. it's not a home run, his foot is not off the base, it didn't cross the blue line. You get into things, and I happen to be the referee that ruled on the Calvin Johnson catch 4 or 5 years ago, which was something that had a little different flavor as to far as black and white, foot out of bounds, things of that nature, the process of the catch. Things that create a little bit of subjectivity as far as a definition of what it is. And I think those are the plays that will always jump out to us as we continue with that. You know, at what point does it become a completed catch? So when you have those types of situations, that's when opinions start to become a little less black and white, and now it's the definitions.
And it seems like there was a lot of confusion for a couple of years on what is a catch, what isn't a catch. But in recent years, I get the feeling that's under control because,
yes,
you know,
I
obviously there's no complaints when you're doing the job well. The complaints are only when you make a mistake. So I feel like the officials have gotten on the same page on what is a catch.
I think you're 100% right. And I've noticed that with some of the plays that did that go back to that, you know, to the initial ruling at that place.
But you don't get credit for that. You get criticized for something else instead.
Oh, that's just part of the business, though, Mike. That's what's fun about it.
What do you prefer, football or basketball? Because you're also a basketball official.
I love both sports. The National Football League being on the stage that it is, and that's nothing against college basketball. It's a great venue. But the interfacing with television, the production of a National Football League game, it cannot be compared in any other sporting event, I don't think, from an officiating standpoint, I should say, especially as a referee. Basketball has its moments, though, because they do play night in and night out, and it's a little closer in its proximities. You know, but both are beautiful, but there's nothing like the NFL.
The CFL has now made pass interference subject to replay review. Good idea or bad idea?
Tough. In my opinion, very difficult.
What makes it difficult?
A lot of intangibles, because you're dealing now with how much restriction is too much restriction. Is a displacement, is that enough of a displacement? The categories that our officials do such an unbelievable job of defining and digesting in real time, which is why they are the best officials in the world. I don't know how you would take something like that and make a definition that's enough restriction. You know, that's when you start getting into a lot more subjectivity, I believe.
Give me one rule you would change if you had the ability to do so.
Wow. That's a great question.
You're just buying time.
Yeah, I am buying time because I'm just trying to go through
things. It's not that great of a question.
You know what it is, Mike? Honestly, I'm probably just trying to go back through whatever I've experienced and thought, gosh, I wish that would be done a little differently. And I can be honest that I think some of the ones that I would have said to you have been changed already. So,
are there too many rules? I've heard people like Tony Dungy say it, Bill Belichick says it. Are there too many rules, too many little intricacies that you have to be processing while you're trying to figure out how to officiate a game?
Yes, and I say there's not too many in a negative sense, but there are many. Let's just say it this way. There are so many rules in football at this level and at all levels, but that's because when you do change one little thing in football and one element to a play, and it makes so much sense to do so, that there are five or six other little tangents off of that that now affect the ruling as it appears to the other. And I think that's why the rule book continues to grow. And if we've watched it with replay, it's a perfect example. If you guys, and I know you've been around it long enough to know that the replay book was only about it was 6 or 7 pages thick, you know, 10 years ago. And now it's a 50-page, rule book, because it has grown tentacles. And elements come up, situations come up. And now we've ruled this on this situation, but because we have this other little element involved, that's kind of an exception to the rule. That's where football officiating, I think you take a lot of pride in that as an official too, because you are, you know, football officials are extremely well studied in what they do. That's a big book. I know you've seen the book.
I have the book.
You have the book. I
would not want anyone to hit me with that book.
No, exactly. But to be able to process 95% to 98% of that in real time and get that penalty finished within a 10 to 15 second period of time is what really we take pride in as officials, you know.
Replay review is the product of the technology that's now available,
yes,
which wasn't available in years past. How do you feel about an expansion of technology, using more cameras to help not just with replay review, but in real time, fully embracing the technologies that are out there now that would make it easier to officiate? Do you like that, or do you like to just keep it, let's have the men out there on the field and now some women getting into it, calling the plays in real time without the assistance of technology?
As a human and as a competitor and as an athlete, which truly is what officials do look at themselves like, and there's a reason for that, they're right to, you do want to do all of it on your own. that's the pride factor, Ed, that I do see this in real time, and most of the world sits on their couch and gets to run now with the advent of technology at home to rewind for 10 seconds and watch my play 15 times and then tell me that they think I missed it when I had 1.2 seconds to do it. That's the pride factor of you honing your craft to that level. So there's definitely the human element in yourself that says, I want to do all of this on my own. And yes, I'm going to make mistakes. And yes, mistakes are part of the game. And we all know that because no one has completed 100% of their passes and the defense hasn't picked off every pass. So there are mistakes. That's what makes the game beautiful. But whenever a mistake that can be corrected, that can decide the outcome of the game or the flow of the game, and it can be done because of the expansion of technology, then you're in this element as an official where at the end of the day we want to get it right. So we have this dance of, yes, would I love to do it all on my own? Sure, I would, as a prideful professional. But where they're going to bring technology into this and help me get things right that maybe just by human error, which is a very small percentage when you do look at our incorrects, can be fixed. Yeah, I want to do that too because I don't want to inject myself in the game in a negative fashion if possible.
Do you think it's possible to ever get to 100% accuracy on a consistent basis?
If I work one of those, I'm quitting. I'm doing the Red Grange, Mike. I'm taking the jersey off.
He's going to walk off.
Because I don't know if I'm ever going to duplicate it. So, you know, we all strive to do that. But we all understand we're human. And I guess that's what drives them. I mean, that's why we do what we do here, player-wise too. It's the repetition, it's the practice, it's the honing your craft. So we always strive to be that with the understanding that in this game and in life, we're probably never going to be perfect.
Well, great perspective and great stuff. Good talking to you. Appreciate it and have a great season.
Great. Thanks a bunch, Mike.
Thanks, Gene.
Okay, thank you.
Well, here he is fresh off the practice field. Pads still on at my request because you're the only one that's kept the pads on. Everybody else takes them off. But you were just out there catching the balls out of the jugs machines. And I see you got a good camaraderie already with Kenny Vaccaro, Rafael Bush. How important is it that you guys develop that kind of relationship now?
It's definitely important. Anytime you can go out there and build a chemistry, you know, that carries over to Sundays and knowing where guys are at on the field, their tendencies. So anytime you can do things like that, it always helps.
Who's the best at catching the one-handed balls out of the jugs machine?
I'd have to go with myself right now. But those guys, that we're all putting in work. You know, we all want to up our level, you know, in our different parts of our games. You know, they're big hitters. They do a lot of different things well. So I'm learning from them just as much. It's a give and take. So I'm enjoying it.
How surprised were you when you found out the Saints were very interested in signing you and that they would be able to pull it off given their cap situation?
I was a little bit surprised. You know, it was kind of a, you know, they came kind of out of nowhere. You know, I wasn't expecting it myself, but that's kind of how this thing goes. You know, when free agency happens, you know, a lot of times, you know, you can get surprises.
So you go from Buffalo to New Orleans. What do you do with all your winter coats?
Oh, you know what?
You may need them here.
You're right. I might need them every now and then, but nowhere near as much as I needed in Buffalo. So it'll be a good change of climate for me down here. But definitely, I'll put them to use at some point.
I know it was a little bit of a surprise for folks who follow the game that you needed back surgery in the off season, but all systems go. Everything's moving in the direction for you to be 100% ready to go week one.
Yeah, I'm feeling good, you know, and I'm just, you know, going according to what my doctor's telling me to do. And allowing me to do, and I'm being smart. You know, we have great trainers here, and they're helping me out a lot. So I really appreciate that. And you know, that's the goal. The goal is to, you know, be ready by week one.
Will you play in the preseason opener?
That's a question for Coach Payton. You know, I don't know what their plans are, so I'm just going to go according to what they asked me to do.
And the defense took a big jump last year with defensive coordinator Rob Brien. How much better do you think the defense can be this year?
Oh, you know, our motto is be better than the best, and you know. Coach Rob Ryan, you know, he emphasizes that a lot. And I'm just thankful that, you know, I get to play for him. You know, I've heard a lot about him, you know, and get to play for him before he becomes a head coach. You know, I think he has that type of, you know, pedigree, and I think he will be a head coach soon. So I'm glad I get a chance to play for him before that happens.
How surprised are you that he isn't already a head coach?
I'm very surprised. But, you know, like I said, I'm thankful that I get to, you know, play under him while he is, you know, a coordinator, because I think that is the next step. He is a great coach.
On the offensive side of the ball, Brandon Cooks is generating a lot of buzz. What have you seen from him so far in practice?
He's very mature for a rookie. You know, he comes in, you know, gets his work in, and he does a lot of the little things that rookies don't normally do. He does them really well. So, you know, his maturity level is something that jumps out.
Jimmy Graham, whether he's a tight end, receiver, or any other position, the guy just seems to be a complete and total freak of nature. What's the craziest thing that you have seen him do physically?
I think really it's just, I mean, he has such soft hands, but, you know, his size and how much, you know, how big he is, imposing when you really are up close with him. He just does a great job. He has great body control to be that size. And so, yeah, he just does a lot of things well.
He says he's still going to dunk the football when he scores a touchdown. Whose job is it on the team to talk him out of it, to not give up the 15 yards?
Nobody's. Listen, as long as he's in the end zone, that's what we want. So that's his decision to make. But as long as he's getting in the end zone, you know, that's a great thing.
You say you want to be better than the best. The best safeties right now, the consensus is the Seattle Seahawks. I know you've talked recently about the ability of the Saints safeties to be as good. Hey, let's be confident, or that is, we believe we really can be that good. We believe we are that good.
No, it's not. You know, that's definitely confidence. You know, I believe that we are right up there, but at the same time, talent level. But like I said before, that's on paper. You know, we have to, like you said, the camaraderie, what we're doing, building that camaraderie. They have that. You know, I've talked to those guys out there. They have that. You know, that brotherhood, that camaraderie, where they know where each other is going to be, and I respect that. You know, and I think that that's something that we are trying to get to. We're trying to get to that level, and that's why, you know, we're spending extra time getting to know each other and doing things like that.
How much attention will you pay to the Bills this year after spending 5 years with them?
I mean, my focus is here, but you know, naturally, you know, I'll always have friends on that team, so people in the organization. So I'll definitely, you know, keep track of, you know, if I have some time, you know, check up on the guys, see how they're doing, you know, throughout the year.
And now you get a great shot at getting to the postseason, something that hasn't happened for you yet in your career. What's your expectation for this team?
My expectation is, you know, to go all the way. You know, that's the expectation that's been set, you know, from coming here, from Drew Brees, Coach Payton, you know, everyone on down is on board. That's the standard that's been set here. And that's our mindset.
Is one of the problems in Buffalo been that there's just been so many changes in recent years? How many different head coaches, how many different coordinators did you have in 5 years?
I've had 3 different head coaches and four different coordinators in my 5 years.
And how much harder does that make it to just have any sense of consistency and continuity?
Oh, it's tremendously hard because, you know, like you talk about those great teams, like the Seattles and stuff like that, that consistency helps you. You know, when you're running the same defense over and over, the next year you're working on the details, you know, it becomes fine tuning of what you already know. And when you have change, you know, a lot of that you're starting from zero every year. You know, it's almost like essentially like being a rookie every year, you know, trying to learn everything.
Now you're out here fielding punts earlier this week. Do you know something the rest of us don't about some special teams contributions this year?
I don't know. That's we'll see. That's kind of
in a big game, in a big spot, put Jarris back there.
I never know.
Get a pooch punt from somebody, you just drop back and there you go.
Could happen.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that. We're looking forward to see how everything goes for you this year. Congratulations on the great success, and thanks for a few minutes.
Thanks a lot. Really
all right.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You, buddy.
All right. Thank you.